Welcome to a podcast with O'Reilly Media. This is Alexander Howard, Radar's Washington correspondent. Last month, I spoke with Undersecretary of State for Democracy and Global Affairs, Maria Otero, from the United States Department of State, about the upcoming Open Government Partnership, whose launch is going to be September 20th in New York City. I'll be reporting about the partnership launch at the O'Reilly Radar. This podcast discusses the launch event that was held in Washington at the State Department on July 12th and delves into some of the expectations that people have for open government and for the results of the partnership. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Please check out the live blog at radar.oreilly.com/gov2 on the 20th.
You've had real experience before you joined the State Department in terms of your work at Axion International, which does microfinance. I gather that microfinance has been important for the developing world in terms of giving people access to capital and to stimulate entrepreneurial growth. The thing that I found really interesting once I watched Secretary Clinton's remarks is this explicit connection between open government and open data and economic activity. And I'll read back her quote. Said Secretary Clinton, "We've also seen the correlation between openness in government and success in the economic sphere. Countries committed to defending transparency and fighting corruption are often more attracted to entrepreneurs. And if you can create small and medium-sized businesses, you have a broader base for economic activity. At a time when global competition for trade and investment is fierce, openness is not just good for governance, it is also good for a sustainable growth in GDP." Can you speak further about how open government and greater degrees of transparency or accountability are related to investment, economic output, or activity?
Yes, I think what the Secretary said really summarizes well one aspect of both economic growth and even economic development in a country, which is really how the rest of the world perceive it and how the rest of the world measure risk when you invest in a country, which clearly, if anybody looks at the components of country risk as you invest, issues that have to do with the transparency and accountability are present within the factors that comprise that equation. Additionally, however, some of the interesting things that came up both by observations from the participants but also from panelists were other dimensions of this work. One was clearly that transparency will ensure that resources are used for what they are meant to be used for in their totality, in part because you are seeing the transfer of funds and the use of funds to make sure that some of that is not being set aside for other things or being in some way taken out for corrupt reasons. So that concept of being able to use a country's revenues in order to carry out a government's mandate and plan is again one way in which the economic concept becomes important, because even if you're talking about health, if in fact you are providing improved health services to your population, you are improving their capacity to be productive citizens and to be able to contribute to the economy. I mean, you can just go across the board. Another way that came up, which was very interesting, and it was actually brought up by Kenya, was the degree to which the fact that they themselves were not asking to collect information completely, but now that they are, how it is that they are looking at some of the items that they import into the country that actually they themselves could produce or could have. Just looking more carefully both at their balance of trade issues, recording all the information, giving emphasis to using data to make decisions led certainly the Kenya participant to give a couple of examples of how their imports had decreased in a couple of areas. These are different ways in which open government can address directly the question that you're asking. And I think we're going to come up with a lot more. As countries do this work more and more, we will see, especially as they are looking at the budget and the way that the resources are allocated, that this will also, and the Secretary talked about this, conceivably have an impact on the tax revenue base of a country, because there are many citizens who, either for excuse or otherwise, say, well, why am I going to pay taxes? It's going to go into the pockets of some bureaucrat, and it's really not going to bring about changes. The minute you have more transparency and people begin to see how their taxes are being used, you then again increase the tax revenue that the country has available.
there's a really interesting way that I think that particular kind of transparency can work towards accountability, as you described. One of the interesting things I've also seen at the city level, and I'm writing the piece about Chicago right now, and I've covered others too, is how the collection of data can enable them to, as you say, make better decisions. And that often the improved information management that comes from an open data effort, or especially as it gets refined and improved and otherwise organized and structured, is that the government itself can get a great deal more insight into its own operations. That ends up being incredibly important for the productivity and efficiency that the people are expecting from their public servants. And that internal story seems to be very important.
Your example and my example then I think lead to one of the other characteristics of the open government partnership that is also very interesting, which is that it is opened to developed countries that have cities like Chicago and developing countries like Kenya that have cities like Malindi and like Kisumu, which if you were to compare to Chicago, you wouldn't believe. But the point is that some of these tools for transparency can be used even by countries that one may think may not have the resources to be able to do that. Or even the know-how. In fact, it is available across the board, and that is one of the characteristics of the open government partnership, both recognizing that and ensuring that the leadership in this partnership from the outset is comprised of countries from the north and from the south. Again, showing examples of how you can do this in the south that are attainable to the people that, to the countries that want to be able to do that. So, it's very interesting that we can talk about Chicago and, say, Kisumu, Kenya, in the same breath.
It says something about how technology has become available around the world because of the spread of the Internet and also through a lot of the lighter weight, not just collaborative technology, but open source technology, too. That's something that Civic Commons and Andrew McLaughlin are working on, and certainly something that O'Reilly has been involved in, something I've learned about. One of my favorite stories that Tim has told me, and he actually told it at the Tech at State event, was back in the 90s, I gather they used to bring people over from other countries and have weekend workshops. And they'd send them back with Sun servers and with Cisco routers and with O'Reilly books to help them build the Internet in their countries. Now there's something new going on where people have been building out their networks, and now they're interested in how they can start to participate in this open data revolution, you know, how they can start to get to this next level. It's really heartening on a deep level to see that the tools for data manipulation, structuring, publishing are becoming massively democratized. You don't have to have the kinds of resources that exist in the first world to access. In terms of the specifics here, what concrete outcomes for open government around the world should citizens, advocates, entrepreneurs, and technologists be looking for from this partnership?
Well, the partnership is the first time that there is really a multilateral platform to address these issues. The partnership could have focused on having countries come in and present best practice and exchange ideas and then just go home. But the partnership is really focused on first having countries that are participate that have already demonstrated interest in this area and have already put in place a variety of different things and the material laid out, if you will, the minimum standards that are being requested. In fact, we passed out a lovely brochure that laid all this out. What the partnership really looks for is to provide a mechanism whereby the countries can each develop their own national plans on ways to expand what they're doing in transparency, accountability, civic engagement, or to start new initiatives for them. That is really what is very different and important about this partnership, is that it is very action and results oriented. So the countries that will participate in the partnership will commit themselves to address one of the what are being called grand challenges. Grand challenges can be anything from public service or addressing public integrity issues or even managing public resources. And using those challenges, they need to be able to create a plan. Now, countries can, of course, choose what they're going to address. The partnership is not saying, now all of you have to do the same thing. This is very much based on the way in which each country is assessing the specific areas in which they are interested in addressing. And this is really kind of fascinating to look at with more depth, because if you were to sit with some of these countries, you would note that some of these countries are coming at expanding their capacity in transparency by, for example, looking at issues that are of particular interest to them. One country, for example, noted that the points of corruption for them in particular are the courts and the prison system itself, because a lot of money gets exchanged there. So they're using those as an entry point. Another country is looking at some of the additional areas that they've been working in the past and, you know, expanding, say, a portal that they have that is providing more information. So the point is that the partnership is challenging countries to identify those areas of most interest to them and then to be able to develop a plan that will allow them to make changes and to have some real results come out of this. So I think that the broad vision for this effort is to really mobilize countries to do something very concrete and in the process to develop their own capacity for doing it. You know, and of course here one can note that there will be some resources available to help countries do this work. And that's really at the core of the work. Now, the role of technology in doing all this is very apparent to anybody who's been alive in the last decade. And how countries are using technology, everything from social media to creating their own websites to a variety of different things, is really impressive and very innovative. So, of course, the private sector, if they've got any brains in their head, are seeing this also as an important business opportunity. Whether you're creating new apps or you're working directly with different governments keeping your eyes open in this space, you also create different mechanisms, different technology that can be of use to government. Bottom line is that the real effort here and the real outcome that would make the open government partnership successful is a signing up of a significant number of countries that participate and having those countries launch their own action plans and carry them out.
India withdrew from the partnership reportedly over concerns about a third-party audit of its progress. That goes to what you're talking about with the potential successes of this. Often, transparency without accountability doesn't actually lead to better outcomes, right? People make grand pronouncements or say that this is what needs to happen, and then the specific metrics by which the accountability will be measured don't get specified. And that's been one of the critiques of the Open Government Directive that the U.S. issued, is that the measurement came through a dashboard without a great deal of specificity. What you've just described in terms of the mechanism by which countries would be held accountable to their own commitments, can you speak a little bit more to how that would work and why or why not India, which has been making strides in this area, might not have signed on to it initially?
Well, yeah, clearly if countries are carrying this out and are committed to doing this and are making progress and are engaging their government in a wide-ranging and effective way, it makes all the sense in the world to have independent experts who don't do an audit, which is the word that you used, but who really assess also and look at and monitor the progress that's being made. And they do this in a way to maintain that accountability, but also to make sure that you're not rating these countries or grading them or putting them in a category from 1 to 100 or whatever. That process is in place. That was decided upon, and all the countries believe that it adds vigor and rigor to this effort. And I think, as you said, India has provided great value in this area of open government, of transparency, of accountability. They have done very important work, and they are strongly committed to the principles that are espoused by the Open Government Partnership. In fact, in the time that they worked directly, they really contributed a great deal. I think right now, the government has indicated that they can't participate, and I think the reason is precisely the one that you've laid out. But I think they will continue to follow the progress of the partnership. Many countries have bilateral relationships with India and continue to address these issues in a more bilateral way because they have a great deal to contribute, both to this initiative and to the overall work in transparency. I think certainly we completely respect their decision right now to watch this closely but not be part of it right now, and to continue doing their work internally. I think that's really the way that I understand their position, and certainly if you want to get some more details, it would be very good if you know, you're able to speak to our Indian colleagues about this. But overall, that's really the sense that that comes out of this. I'll take one more, and then off we go.
Okay. Can you speak specifically about some of the platforms and technologies that inspired you, particularly around international examples?
Some of them were really interesting. Estonia, for example, you know, it's they talk about creating a paperless government, and they really are creating e-governance, as they call it, throughout, which is really quite amazing and quite interesting in the way in which they laid out their work. In Iceland, it's very interesting that they're using social media to be able to have citizens participate in the redrafting of their constitution. And they're using Facebook and Twitter and other things to just be able to communicate with a population. Those two examples were very, very interesting. I mentioned some of the ones in Kenya. I don't know if you have delved into Kenya very much, but they have advanced in technology really more than any country in Africa with the M-Pesa system and with the way in which Kenyans are being able to access both information and record some of their own work through their cell phones. I think the Kenyans understand the importance of being able to use this data, and they and some of the ideas that they put forth were more related to this area of saving resources and making some of the money available for other work. So these were some of the ones that were particularly interesting. Mexico had also some very interesting things that they reported on that they're doing that we heard about. England is doing very interesting things. One of the things that's also interesting is that I talked to people during the receptions and during the lunch, and so many of them had just snippets of examples of different ways in which they're trying to provide information to people. Honduras, for example, Honduras is now doing a monthly update of its budget and the way that the resources are allocated, which is making available on its website. So these were some of the questions, some of the examples that came up that were particularly interesting. Really, there were some are very innovative and creative. So I think that's also one of the dimensions that we think is very important in this effort.
Thank you for that.
Good. All right. We appreciate your writing in this space. It's good.
Thanks so much. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Take care.